nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
So I guess the last few lectures we have been basically discussing this simple model, but which allows you to do quantitative calculations on nanoscale conductors, nanoscale devices. Quantitative calculations of current versus voltage. And in a way, it like captures the most important parts of the phenomena, of what is really involved in current flow. Namely, electrons have to come in and out from contact one, that's gamma 1 over h bar. Electrons have to go in and out for contact 2, that's gamma 2 over h bar. And you need some states inside your device so that the electrons can go through. That's this density of states. Now, as I mentioned before, like what we'll be doing essentially in October is we'll be talking about this density of states and how people think about it in different materials, how people calculate it, etc. Whereas at this time, the attitude is, let's say I know the density of states. Question is, what would current versus voltage look like? And what are the basic features? Because this set of equations you could use to model any nanoscale conductor, really, and try to, I mean, this is a very good place to start because of relatively simple. It's got just these three things, essentially. Density of states and the rates at which electrons go in and out. Now, the basic equations, which I went through last day and derived, is the first one that gives you the current. Second, that tells you the number of electrons inside your device. And the third is, which tells you the potential energy, U, inside the channel. Now, the real approximation in all this thinking is that we are treating this entire device as just one point. So we say, okay, what's the U inside here? In a longer device with spatial variations, you may need to have a U that's actually a function of X, something that's a little different here than there, etc. Those are the issues one would have to think about in bigger devices often. But if you ignore that, if you generally assume that you don't have to worry about the spatial variations, then we just take one number that tells you the average potential in there. And that's what goes in here. And as we mentioned, these two equations have to be solved self-consistently. In other words, so this is an equation which, given U, allows you to calculate N. This is an equation where, given N, you can calculate U. And what you have to do is find a solution for N and U which satisfy both. Right? And so that's what requires a self-consistent calculation, which is what I asked you to do in this latest homework. The first two problems involve solving this set of equations, except that the self-consistent calculation is only needed in problem 2. It's not needed in problem 1, I believe. The reason is that in problem 1, I said, assume U0 equal to 0. You see, because if you set that equal to 0, then it kind of decouples the two things. Because then you see U doesn't depend on N anymore. So then it's a one-shot thing. You see, you don't need any. So that's why for problem 1, you really don't need to do it self-consistently. But for problem 2, I believe, you need to. Okay. Now, today what I'd like to do then is say a few more words about this set of equations and physically what various quantities represent and how you can interpret experiments in terms of these. So in other words, what we'll be trying to do is trying to understand what these equations tell us. And as I often stress, that this calculating and understanding are kind of two distinct things, and you can do one without being able to do the other. In other words, as far as calculating is concerned, you know, given how do I calculate current versus voltage, I'd say if you know how to program this set of equations into your computer, you should be able to. As far as calculating, I mean, nothing I'm saying comes from anything outside of this. So given this, you can calculate it, right? But then understanding is something else. And understanding means when you look at that current versus voltage, can you kind of guess what it should have looked like even before you calculated it? And that way, if you make mistakes, you can say, well, no, this doesn't look like what I should be getting. So why am I not getting this, etc. And so those two things are kind of separate things, and you have to do those separately. In the sense, one, you have to figure out how to do calculate reliably so that you, whatever you're doing is correct as far as this set of equations is concerned. And then it comes to understanding what it is you're calculating. Okay. Now, before I go on to, I guess if you looked at the current versus voltage of any of these devices like this, there's two kinds of things people look at. You see, because you got these two voltages whose role is very different. One is this voltage between source and drain, which is what drives the current. And the other is this gate voltage, which just allows you to control that current. Right? And usually people write this with another subscript here, D. Right? So that's the drain voltage, that's the gate voltage. Now, so one of the curves that often people calculate is current versus drain voltage. That is, what is the current through this device as I increase the voltage between source and drain? And the kind of curves you typically get look like this. That is, at first when you increase the drain voltage, the current increases linearly, and then it wants to level off. And ideally, you would have actually wanted it to level off perfectly. That would make circuit design a whole lot easier if the current in your transistor didn't depend on drain voltage. Okay? But as it turns out, when you get to these small devices, one of the problems is it's really hard to get something that's really leveled off that well. It wants to keep increasing. And then people have learned to kind of live with it, except that if it's too bad, then you can't really go very far with it. Okay. So now I drew two curves here. What do those represent? Why don't I have just one curve? Why a family of curves? Different VG. So you're basically increasing VG. Now, is it increasing VG or decreasing VG? Well, the way I think about this is, in this, the way I have drawn this, if I make VG more positive, would I expect more current or less current? More current. Because if I make it more positive, it will kind of pull this down. And because I've drawn it this way, the more I pull it down, the more states I have to conduct through, in a way. So this is what you call the n-type device. On the other hand, you see, if your density of states had looked kind of like this. Oh, I'm sorry. I can draw this way. Like this, where the density of states increases downwards, which is what would happen if you're close to the valence band, like a p-type material. Then you see, when you put a positive voltage, you keep lowering this, and you get further and further away from this. You see? So if you had started out looking like this, for example, if you put enough positive voltage, you'll turn it off. That's what happens in a p-type device, essentially. Okay. And so this is one part that you, one kind of plot that you do. Another kind of plot that you often do is you plot gate voltage versus current, but with a small drain voltage. So let's say somewhere here. So that means you're kind of looking at just the linear resistance or conductance of this device and plotting it as a function of VG. And what you typically have is a curve that looks something like this. Now, why is that? Well, I guess I mean that for a n-type device. So let's say I have a device something like this, and we put a small voltage across it, not a whole lot, just a small voltage, and we ask what current will we get. And the answer is that at first, if VG is way out here, very negative, then you won't get any current. I'd say this picture then corresponds to something like this. Where the density of states is way up here, you put a little voltage here, nothing much happens. no states there to conduct through. Because remember, the basic principle always is that in order to get current, you must have states in this window between mu 1 and mu 2. Right? And a few kT either way. Why? Because current is finally determined by this integral. It involves two things. One is density of states. The other is F1 minus F2. F1 minus F2 is non-zero only in this window. And if the density of states happens to be zero there, then you're out of luck. Overall, you never get much out of integrating this because this is non-zero where this is zero. And having some states up here doesn't help because up there, of course, F1 minus F2 itself is zero. So all those states don't matter. Okay. So that's where kind of you are starting out here. And then at some point, it starts increasing. Why is that? Well, because if you put enough gate voltage on this, you will gradually get into this window. So you started out here. As you put more and more gate voltage, you kind of lower it down here. And so your conductance increases at that point. So that you get more current through it. Okay. So that's one of the kind of curves people plot. This is small VD. Another kind of plot sometimes people do is, what is the number of electrons in the channel as a function of VG? So number of electrons, you could say, again, when it was like this, there was hardly any electrons. And we're saying number of electrons, assuming that you have a very small bias. So as far as this is discussion is concerned, it's almost as if you have no drain voltage, almost as if you have a constant chemical potential across this. So if it's up here, there's hardly any electrons because the chemical potential is here. So when you, and for this discussion, since I'm saying the bias is almost zero, F1 and F2 are basically equal. And so all this complicated stuff just drops out, and this just becomes a single Fermi function F, zero, let's say. Because F1 and F2 are equal, and let me call that F0, and then you'll notice the gamma 1 plus gamma 2 just cancels out, and it just becomes one simple number F0. And that basically says when you're close to equilibrium, the number of electrons is given by integral over energy, density of states times the Fermi function. Because at equilibrium, of course, it's the same Fermi function everywhere. It's just that when you have non-equilibrium, two different Fermi functions, then what you have inside is like a weighted average of the two. Okay. So, so you'd think then electron density also would kind of be very small, but then at some point would increase. Would increase when you have put enough voltage on this gate to lower it into this window. That's when you'll pick up electrons. Okay. So usually this point where the current turns on, because this is what you'd call the off state of the transistor, this is what you'd call the on state. And the point where this kind of turns on, that's what you call the threshold voltage, VT. Now exactly what is that voltage? Well, the question is, what voltage does it take to lower this density of states to where the chemical potential is? Well, what voltage it takes, of course, depends on how far it was in the first place. Like how far above the chemical potential it was, which depends a lot on the different materials involved. That is, what metal are you using here? How does its work function differ from the semiconductor? Those issues will determine where this is in the first place. See? And that's why threshold voltages are something that, you know, people try to adjust. And you can, using different materials, you could get different threshold voltages. But the point is, given a particular threshold voltage, on one side it will be off, the other side it will increase. Okay. And all this will kind of come out of just solving this set of equations. So as I said, what we are trying to do is, I'm not telling you any new results per se. It's like this same set of equations, really. We're just trying to understand why you get behavior like this. Okay. Now, in order to apply this set of equations to a device like this, which is relatively long. One point I should mention is, what is this gamma that one should use in a relatively long device? Now, this is where, I believe, I pointed out, I think, on the first day, that when you look at devices, and you look at the length scale of things, and I'm going by a factor of 1,000, so a nanometer, factor of 1,000 is a micrometer, another factor of 1,000 is like a millimeter. And nanometer is like atomic dimensions. A nanometer contains about 4 atoms. Now, somewhere in here, usually, you'd say that electrons tend to go from left to right ballistically around here, below a micron. And so today's devices, the channel length is approximately a 20th of that. So it's a 20th of a micron somewhere around here. And this is where you'd call what you'd call ballistic transport. And when you get down smaller, that's when you have to worry about the wave nature of electrons. You know, issues like tunneling, interference, etc., which require Schrodinger equation. But around here, usually, you don't have to worry too much about the wave nature. I'll explain later why. But basically, but this is what you call ballistic transport. Whereas around here, the transport is what you call diffusive. Something like this. Where an electron, as it gets through your device, gets knocked around many, many times before it gets out. Okay. Now, the question is, what do we use for this gamma here? And physically, what gamma represents then is how easily an electron in here gets out into a contact. What time it takes. Remember, that's what physically it represents. If you remember, well, I got this equation last day out of 2 equations looking like this. Let me write that here. So I think last day, the way I got this equation is by saying that the current near contact 1 depends on the difference between F1 and F. So F1 is the Fermi function here. F is the occupation of levels here. This is given by a Fermi function because it's in equilibrium, this contact. But this does not need to be in equilibrium. This can be anything. And this is F2. So the current at one end was this. Current at the other end was this, and we said the two have to be equal, and thereby we calculated what the effective F has to be, and that's how I got this, etc. That's what we did last day. Okay. Now, so let's think of a situation where current is flowing, and F1 is 1, and F2 is 0, let's say. So basically then, this quantity here tells you, how the current flows out from here onto there. And what it says is, if you look at this integral, u over h bar integral dE, density of states times f, that's like the number of electrons inside it. So you can see that the current is kind of written as q over h bar times gamma times the number of electrons. If you look at this, what I'm arguing is that this is 0, let's say. So F times the density of states times the integrated over energy, that tells you the number of electrons. And then you have a Q gamma over H bar. So that kind of gives you a feeling for what this really represents. It kind of is the ratio between the current and the number of electrons that is needed to carry that current. That's kind of what it is, roughly. See? And in a very small device, like if you had just a level here, then we said that, you know, the gamma depends on how well coupled it is to the contacts. On the other hand, if you had a relatively longish device and electrons are flowing ballistically through it, then you see it doesn't matter too much what exactly this contact is like, as long as it can flow out easily. Then the real question more is, how long does it take to go inside this device? You see? And what you can show is, you know, here, as I said, electrons you almost think of like particles. So in this thing, you can just think of it as if it's just a set of cars on a highway. You're just going down, and you have cars coming out of here at some rate. So how is it related to the number of cars in here, essentially, see? And what you can show is that if you ask, well, how many electrons come out of here per second, or let's say in a given instant of time t? So you'd say, well, in a given instant of time t, all the cars that are within a distance of v times t will have come out, because v is the velocity, is the speed with which the cars are moving. So whatever rate the cars are moving from here, they will, all the cars within this distance will come out. And so you could write the current of electrons would be like the number of cars per unit length times vt. So this is this length. So all the electrons within this length come out. And how many electrons do I have here? Well, it's the number of electrons per unit length times that. So that's the amount, number of electrons that are coming out per second. So if I want the current, of course, I drop the t, because it's the total number coming out per second, you see? And since each electron carries an amount of charge q, I'd put a q here. So usually this is the relation you have when electrons are just moving uniformly with some velocity. And as I said, there's no more physics here than cars going down a highway. It's basically the same kind of thing. This kind of thing happens often in other contexts also. You know, you say, like, let's say in this ECE department, we have 300 undergraduates graduating every semester, every year, let's say, 300. Now, the question you're going to ask is, how many students do we have, steady state, in this department? And and the answer is, well, you see, it will be 1,200 because every student spends about 4 years in there. You see? So the number of students graduating per year would be like the steady state number of students divided by the time it takes, you see? And this is essentially just that, nothing more than that, really, is about it, you see? Okay. Anyway, so based on this, you'd deduce then that gamma over H bar is like V over L. That's all. So all I was trying to get at is that when you are trying to model a ballistic device, then the appropriate gamma to use is this H bar V over L. So for ballistic, like, I'll just put that down here. Gamma is equal to H bar V over L. That's it. And usually in devices, the one and two would be equal, in which case, as you know, this becomes a little simpler. It is, instead of this gamma 1, gamma 2 over gamma 1 plus gamma 2, you could just write it as gamma over 2, where these two are equal and equal to gamma. If gamma 1 is equal to gamma 2 equals gamma, you could just put a gamma over 2 there. Anyway, so when you're trying to model a device then, a ballistic device, you could use a gamma like this. And this velocity is just tells you how fast the electrons move through this thing. Now, one of the points I had made before is that, you see, when you get to a big device, you expect the current to be proportional to the area. Because, after all, if you had a conductor that was, you know, had a cross-section like this, or it had a cross-section that was twice as big, you'd expect there to be twice as much current. Now, the question is, how would that come out of this? Well, the thing is that the density of states when you get to big conductors is proportional to the volume. Volume meaning A times L, area times length. And what I just showed you is that for ballistic conductors, the gamma itself goes as H bar V over L. And so the length cancels out. And so you'd calculate a current that's proportional to the cross-sectional area in ballistic conductors. But that isn't like Ohm's law. Ohm's law is that current should be proportional to area divided by length. And the reason you get that in big devices is because, you see, this thing about gamma being proportional to H bar V over L, that's only true for ballistic conduction. If you are doing this, I mean, if this electron is doing this as it gets through the device, it will require more time than what this says. Because, you see, you're not, never quite going in the same direction long enough for this to work. You see? So the correct formula here would be, in this limit of things, would be something like gamma equals H bar V over L times another factor, which is actually goes inversely as length. Let me explain why. But the point is that the electron, the time it takes to get through your device is now proportional to L squared rather than to L. That's the point. Okay. Now, the way you can show that simply is something like this. That, you see, there's this electron which is going around in every direction so far. And the question you're asking is that if I start off an electron here, then, of course, after a certain length of time, what will be its RMS position relative to where it started? So, you know, it could be, of course, over on this side, or it could be over on that side. Question is, what's the width of that curve? Roughly, how far will it be from where it started? And one way to get that answer is to say that, you see, let's say the mean free time, the time that it travels before it gets scattered, let's say is tau. So the distance it travels in that time is V tau. And that's what people call the mean free path. So mean free path is the distance an electron travels before it gets all scattered. Okay. Now, what we want to know is how far will it get in a length of time t? And if it was ballistic, I'd have just multiplied V times t. But the thing is, I cannot quite do that because these are all, you know, in every which way. So what we have to do is take this V tau, which is the distance it travels in a mean free time, and then add up the squares of all those. So in a given length of time, t, there will be t over tau will be the number of such segments. You see, because every mean free time tau, it gets scattered. So after some time t, the number of arrows like this I'll have will be t over tau. Each arrow is of length v tau. So when I add it all up, it's the squares that I have to add because it's like noise. Because it's like got all positive and negative numbers. It's the squares that add. So eventually the distance you'll go is something like this. And that will be like the mean squared distance you travel. Electron will travel, and the thing is that that distance is then proportional to time. So that, I mean, the time is proportional to L squared rather than L. And this is how it's kind of different from what you have in the ballistic case. So this then you could write, so from this point of view you could say, well, so the time it takes is like, all right, let me write inverse of the time. So 1 over t would be L square. This is like V square. Can you help me? Did I write this correctly now? So 1 over time is like 1 over L square times this square divided by tau, so it's like V squared tau, right? I think that's it. Yeah. And this I could write as V over L times V tau over L. So the point is that if this was ballistic, then the time it would have taken would be V over L. But now the time is like V over L times mean free path over L. So in this limit of things, then the gamma is whatever it was for the ballistic thing, but somewhat reduced by that factor. How many mean free paths it is. So if it is like 10 mean free paths long, then the time it will take will be like 10 times as long, and the gamma will be 10 times smaller. That's basically it. So, and because of this L squared then, that's why I'd argue you get the Ohm's law out of this. Because now, you see, this is AL, but the gamma you put in now has a L squared thing in it. Okay? So, within that model then, the way you can cover this entire schema, you know, as I mentioned on the first day, that as you go from 1 nanometer to 1 millimeter, the nature of current flow changes widely. Down here, we are talking of going through atomic levels, single level. And the point I tried to make was that the maximum conductance you get through a level is this Q square over H. So that's a limit where you got just one level and you're trying to conduct through it, and there's a density of states that comes from broadening that level. That's one limit of things, molecular conduction. And then you come to this ballistic thing where conductor current is proportional to the area. And then you come to the diffusive thing where you actually have Ohm's law. And this is how you sort of go from one to the other. And these two, actually what you could show, I won't go into it right now, is that a more general formula that would cover both of these would be something like this. This takes a little discussion, but we won't go through this right now. So if you write the gamma as this, then it sort of interpolates from this to this, in the sense that when the length is small compared to a mean free path, then you can drop this and this just becomes 1. And you get gamma equals h bar v over L. Whereas when the length is many, many mean free paths, that's when you can drop this. And it just becomes this equation here. So this is an equation that more or less takes you across this entire region. You see, it can describe current flow through this entire region. And a lot of the devices of interest today are somewhere in this borderline here. You see, it's not fully ballistic, but then it's not quite in the diffusive limit either. The lengths are a few mean free paths, 2, 3, 4 mean free paths. And so this is often a form of the equation that carries it through fairly well. Okay, so I'll just write that here, lambda over L plus lambda. Okay. So that tells you what gamma you can use here. And then once you have the gamma, the other important thing you need is this density of states. And that, of course, requires an actual discussion of where this density of states come from, how you think about different materials and so on. And that, as I said, I will do in October in general. So usually in a two-dimensional conductor, you know, like in a field effect transistor, usually you have a channel that carries current, like a two-dimensional sheet of electrons. Usually the density of states looks something like this. It's almost constant once it steps up, and then it's... But that requires, where that comes from, that's something that requires more discussion, which is what we'll get into later. Okay. Now, I guess there are a few things we could talk about. One is, then, what about this... This part of it you often call the on current. So one of the quantities of interest in any of these transistors is what is the maximum on current that you can get from it. So which means when you have put a voltage that's big enough, what do you get? Now, the way I'd say it then is that if you had a density of states that's, say, looking like this, Oops, let me draw what I... Then, on current means that you have put a voltage that is big enough that the mu2 is somewhere down here. And if the mu2 is somewhere down there, then the current is essentially because of this. In other words, when I do this integral, what I'm getting is basically a contribution from this part. That's it. Because after that, there's no density of states. This is what it's giving you, whatever it is. Okay. Now, what you might say then is that when I pull this drain voltage down more and more, the current shouldn't increase. Because after all, nothing much is changing around here, you could argue. Now, why is it that this keeps increasing? Then, it's because when you put a voltage on here, the potential inside in this conductor itself keeps slipping down. So in other words, if it's 0 here and 1 volt there, the thing is, the potential here, ideally what a transistor would like to do if you had really designed it right, then as long as the gate voltage is fixed, this density of states would stay put right there, wouldn't move. That's what the best transistors would do. See? But in small devices, that's getting harder and harder. Because after all, you know, this is 200 atoms long. And unless you are like 20 atoms away, it's very hard to control the potential very well with this one. It tends to get influenced by that anyway. So in short devices, what happens is this keeps slipping down. And because it slips down, of course, the current also keeps wanting to increase. Okay. Now so let's assume then that we are at some point here and we are asking the question that in a situation like this, what is the current through this device? And we could write the current then from the top equation as Q over H bar integral dE and I'll just put a gamma over 2 times F1. So what happened to the F2? Well, the idea is that, you see, I'm considering a bias big enough so that in this energy range, you see, where the current flows, where all the density of states is, F2 is essentially 0. You see, it's a big enough current that it doesn't matter. Of course, F2 is not 0 down here, but then there's no density of states there. So that doesn't contribute to this integral anyway. What contributes to the integral is the stuff up here, and right there F2 is 0. So I can drop the F2 and write it like this. Now, if you look at the number of electrons, that expression, that also I could write as do I have this right or have I missed something? Remember, I'm assuming that gamma 1 and gamma 2 are equal and equal to gamma. So I've put gamma 1 equal to gamma 2 equal to gamma. So can you help me? Do I have this right? A half, right. So what I missed is this factor of 2. Why the half? Well, because I'm dropping the F2. So it's really just this divided by this, and then gamma 1 is equal to gamma 2, so that's just half. And that's it. Okay, so that's it. So now you'll notice both of these are kind of like the same expression, really, except for a gamma sitting there. Actually, in the N, there was no good reason to have the Q over H bar. Right? For the N, it's just the number of electrons. Q over H bar comes in for the current. Okay. Good enough. So what I can do then is I could write I as N times, can you help me? N times Q gamma over H bar, like we had said before. And this gamma over H bar we discussed And the ballistic limit of things would be like V over L. So you could put in V over L there. So, and this is like the on current. So I should qualify it, you see. The reason this equation is different from that one is this is, of course, general. This works no matter what F1 is and what F2 is. But now I have specialized to this condition where it's the on current. There's nothing coming from the right. It's all coming from the left. So that's why we have this, right? Okay. So the on current then is like Q times N V over L. And that's this. And this is the velocity of the electrons in the channel as they go through this region, whatever the velocity. Now, often people write this N. N is this number of electrons in here. They say that, well, from this experiment, you kind of know how N increases with VG. So you could approximate N as, so I'll have Q, and for this N, I'll write something proportional to VG minus VT. Yes, please.
Just to clarify, is all this just for N-type materials?
Right. The way I'm thinking, yes. Now, for P-type materials, I don't think there would be any fundamental change apart from the science of certain things that has to be done carefully. That's about it. About what the threshold voltage is and how it increases, that I'd have to think through a little bit to me. But in essence, though, it will work much the same way. So it's equal to this Q VG minus VT V over L. Now, the thing is, the number of electrons, if you assume this is kind of linear, so this is V sub T. So it's increasing after you go from V. This is VG minus VT. And the coefficient here, you see, this is number of electrons as a function of voltage. So you could write that, the coefficient, as like a capacitance. So you can put a capacitance here. And C times VG minus VT would be charge, which is like Q times N. Right? So it will be something like this. And usually people write this capacitance as capacitance per unit area. So sort of like whatever the area of that whole conductor is. And so you'd multiply it by the area. So the length would, multiplied by the, I didn't write that correctly. The, in here, if this is the length, and then this is the width, and we are assuming the electrons are kind of all over this, let's say, then you'd write probably W times L, the width times the length. And then this will cancel. And so the current, the on current per unit width would be this capacitance times voltage times this velocity. And this is the expression that more or less describes usually, you know, how you describe small transistors, that the on current is proportional to voltage. And this is how it is. And this is kind of different from what you probably read about the long transistors, because when you are actually in the very long limit, like 10 microns or more, then I think the on current is actually proportional to the voltage squared for a number of relatively more complicated reasons, which have to do with electrostatics, which we haven't quite discussed. Because as I mentioned, the one important thing you miss totally in this simple model is the variation of the potential across this. See? And those things can become important when you get to really long things. Okay. But for a long time, transistors, I think, have been in the limit where current is really more or less proportional to the gate voltage. Or to some power, maybe a little more than one, but not two, really. Anyway, so in this limit, then you can kind of see how you would get there. And this velocity then is like how fast the electrons travel inside the medium. Yes.
I don't understand where the Q goes.
I had this Qn. So n is the number of electrons. So times Q, that's the charge. And capacitance times voltage is again has the dimensions of charge. So you could say that I replace the Qn with this. And because the capacitance is usually per unit area, it is length times the other dimension involved, that's the W, and then you get this on current per unit width, okay, usually. And typically today's devices, you know, there is the on current per unit width would be like, I'd say milliamp per micron. So I think I got that right. And it depends again, you see, on this capacitance, that is, and then this velocity there. Okay. Now, the part that I didn't discuss much is what determines that capacitance, right? Where does that come from? Okay. Because this is where you could argue in two ways. That is, what we're asking is, when I increase that gate voltage, how much does the, if I increase that gate voltage a little bit, how much does the number of electrons inside here change? And you could argue in two ways. One is, you could argue that that after all, this capacitance should just be whatever you learn in first year in freshman physics, that it is the dielectric constant of a parallel plate capacitor times the area divided by the length, by some distance, right? And that distance would be the thickness of that oxide, etc., however you want. Okay. So that would be one way of thinking about it. Now, another totally different way would have been to say that when I put a voltage here, what I do is I effectively lower this by so much. And if I have a great, if I have a good gate, then when I put 1 millivolt there, I lower it by 1 millivolt. So how many extra electrons do I get? Well, whatever number of electrons fit into 1 millivolt. So in that case, of course, the capacitance you would come up with would depend on the density of states in there. So if you didn't have any states there, it wouldn't change. It would depend on the density. So from that point of view, I think the you would have come up with an expression for capacitance that would be proportional to the density of states. Actually, if you do this carefully, it will be like Q squared times density of state. And this is something that's often called the quantum capacitance, actually. And see, these are two very different physics. You see, this is has to do with the dielectric constant and some geometrical factors. This has to do with the density of states inside a channel. And the thing is that if you had a channel that had a very low density of states, then this is the important thing. If it has a very high density of states, then this is the important thing. And usually conductors are in a regime where this is what matters. So you really don't worry about this. Except that in very small conductors these days, we are coming to a point where often this can be, at least has to be taken into account. Even if it's not the limiting thing, at least has to be taken into account. We're kind of out of time here today, so this aspect I'll finish up on Monday. Okay? Thank you.